Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Paul Hawksby
and Andy Jacobs,
and welcome to the H&J Daily, which this afternoon features the book club later than usual. We normally do it on a Tuesday. Luke Moore was here and we looked at the books of George Plimpton, and one in particular. I hope you enjoy that. We had a chat. Martin Kellner, squad number 9, was here with a week of sport on TV. Enjoy.
It was the World Window Cleaning Championships.
Yeah, yesterday. I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. No, I went. I went to the presentation ceremony where the top prize was given by the former window cleaning skier, Shammy Alcott.
That's nice. Thank you.
Music provided by the Squeegees.
Yeah.
Thank you and good night.
Who else turned up? If you've got any other names from the world of sport and showbiz, or indeed life, that turned up at the Window Cleaning World Cup. It really did take place. We really haven't got room for him today, but Terry Turbo Edwards was hoping to win. He kept his speed record. Terry, 63, took on 15 other window cleaners, but the prize went to the American Jeremiah Hickey. He took the Window Cleaning World Cup. 17.2 seconds. 17 minutes, we'll be pushing it a bit. And the Swede, Jimmy Strom, was second.
Terry lost on penalties, but I think we owe it to our listeners to do the world. We'll do it next week. I mean, we're still international.
We want to find out more. But in the meantime, who are the stars that turned up?
We'd producer said the commentator was Nigel Ladderley.
That's very good, isn't it?
I like that.
Yeah, so keep those coming.
Talking of that,
just some of the people that have turned up the Window Cleaning World Cup. I did like the Squeegees. That was very good.
Thank you very much. As you know, listeners, we are on the 17th floor. You've been told quite a lot, but yeah. I went and had a look at the Shard, talking of window cleaners. And the people who clean the windows in the Shard, you know, they're in that sort of, oh, I wouldn't do that, not for me. I admire them, actually. That is a really frightening job. I mean, you know, you've got, there's just you and a sort of little basket with some ropes. And
you're
that's
a little
it.
Basket.
They,
but they are, you know, they're highly trained, these boys. They know what they're doing, don't they?
Oh, yeah, I suppose they are.
Yeah.
Oh, highly trained.
You've got vertigo, though. You'd be the last person. I mean, you wouldn't go up a ladder outside your house, no, let alone.
That's very true.
Outside the Shard.
Talking of that PSG thing, I watched the game.
We're going to talk about that later. Yeah, Eric Bilderman joins us from L'Equipe. It's a bizarre story, especially as the PSG, the club, have kind of supported those 50 Herberts who turned up yesterday.
I don't know. I mean, the sort of people that went to Kingstonian to watch that game last night, you know, they wouldn't have put up much of a fight. There was a lot of elderly people and young people. There wasn't a lot of Chelsea ultras at the game.
No,
but,
who are the Chelsea
actually, it was a full house. And it was a
great
very
result for Chelsea, wasn't it?
Great result for Chelsea. Yeah. And a very interesting match, in as much as it very much resembled a men's Champions League game. It was very tight. It was sort of both teams pressing, both teams kind of under pressure and giving the ball away for 75 minutes. Then Hannah Blundell scored a brilliant goal and broke the deadlock. And then Chelsea got one on the counter because PSG had to go for it. It was a really good...
I thought, the last 20 minutes were brilliant. It was a good ball, good first touch. Because how often do you see take the ball away? Very
and
good,
the goalkeeping is definitely... It was something that you could level at women's football. Yeah. The goalkeeping was never particularly up to standard in the early days. But nowadays, I mean, Anne Katrinberger, what a save from Amy Lawrence. not the Guardian football writer.
Well, you know, I'm sure she could still play. Nigel Adderley, or Nigel Ladderley, who's commentating at the Window World Cup, has been in touch. And he said former Crackerjack presenter Peter Glaze would have loved to have been there, but of course he would. Just some of the people that love to have gone to the Window Cleaning there. World Cup.
It's a fascinating story.
Sean in Derby says, of course, Madness frontman Suds.
Suds.
He's just one of the people that be at the Window Cleaning World Cup.
There was amazing story about Gemma Collins. She's teamed up with super producer Naughty Boy.
Naughty Boy, yeah.
To launch an unlikely career. And you think, what's this all about and everything? And he's really singing her praises. He's comparing to Beyonce. They're both definitely up there in terms of glamour. And you think, what are you talking about? So I think people would be surprised when they hear Gemma's voice. And then you read on, it says, Naughty Boy, whose own new song, Undo, featuring Callum Scott, is out today. Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
I'm guessing, no disrespect, Gemma, you may have a fantastic voice, but I'm guessing she'll be auto-tuned within an inch of her life.
I'd say so.
Really, yeah. I think you're very little of the original session, I think, will actually go to
I've got a feeling out. You might be right. Yeah, yeah. Somebody who can sing, though, is, of course, Rita Ora.
And, oh, yeah, what a voice. I forgot to tell you, Jim Shelley got in touch, but we'd missed it. By the time I saw Jim's text, she did an Ask Rita the other day.
Really?
For her fans. And I knew you should have got in touch.
Oh, yeah, I should have got in touch.
I know you're a big fan.
Well,
you're
I'm a big fan. And there's an opportunity, I think, opening up for me because Rita's decided to get back with her ex, Andrew Watt, after a short-lived romance with actor Andrew Garfield.
So she likes the Andrews.
People called Andrew. You know, they've got to be in there, haven't they?
So. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure about that, Andy.
Really? Sure, the wife would be too pleased.
Yeah, I'm sure. Also, you know, it's just a coincidence that she went out with two blokes called Andrew.
Know,
it doesn't necessarily mean everybody.
Do you want a quick bit of planning news?
Andrew is irresistible to Rita Ora. Yeah, go on then.
Planning news. Vincent Company has been granted permission, despite objections, to build 75 flats.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, criticism from Historic England, but they passed it, said it was well designed and well thought out. I know you like a bit of planning news.
I do like planning news. It's a bit of a staple these days, trawling the planning news for stories. And we got anything else?
Yes. Surrey batsman Will Jacks hit 37 off one over. The Lancashire bar, I've forgotten his name now. But I can lay claim to that too. We played in a match where I went for 37 off one over.
You did. Franklin Rose, the former West Indies. I mean, to be fair, it was a former West Indies player.
No, he was. And I was bowling my off spin. It was not the same as seam up, which is so deadly.
Six sixes and a no ball, wasn't
it? Well, six sixes and a wide.
And a wide.
Same thing. Six, exactly six, the same thing. Six sixes and a wide.
The new film, of course, coming out soon. Six sixes and a wide, kind of cricket-themed love story.
And a nice bit of a tabloid thesaurus.
Oh, yeah.
We always like that when you can't use the word twice. So this is a story about orange juice. A daily glass of orange juice could cut the risk of life-threatening strokes by almost a quarter. Mm. Other fruit juices appear to have similar benefit.
Great.
The zingy liquids. Who's ever called fruit juice
I've
a zingy liquid?
That kind of very early punky style, wasn't it? One, two, three, four. And who else would love to have been at the Window Cleaning World Cup? Just some of the people you've been telling us about.
Mm.
Of course, says Jim Burry, the toothy comedian Rob Bucket would have loved to have been at the Window Cleaning World Cup. And if Roger Clifford says the ambient music played at the awards would have been by Philip Glass, of course.
TalkSport.com. That's quite esoteric by Roger there.
Text 81089. Tweet TSH and J for just some of the people that were at the Window Cleaning World Cup. It did take place. We've not made this up. Anyway.
He's a big QPR fan, Philip Glass. Did you know that? That's true. I'm not making that as a joke.
I thought it was Michael Nyman who was the...
No, I'm sure it's Philip Glass, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is.
Isn't it?
Or is it somebody else?
And now I've got to check now.
Yeah, that's right. It's all gear. Does it matter?
I can't imagine the fans singing his obscure songs.
Hello, Nyman. Whenever I see him at Loftus Road, give him one of those.
I'm going to check whether it's Philip Glass.
Okay, I'm putting it grand. I'm not really. I don't bet like that. Although we have got the racing on once again this afternoon. I know you love the 3:30 from Musselburgh. You've got it bad.
Hawksby and Jacobs Book Club on Talk Sport.
Yes, time for the book club. Every week we look at a different book and hopefully get you in the mood to go and pick it up and try it yourselves. We'll be taking your recommendations as we go along. If you've read any of the books we're going to discuss, because we're going to really talk about the author and focus on one book, but he wrote a number of fine sports books, the guy called George Plimpton, and here to tell us more about him and his work Luke Moore is back, of course, from the season ticket and from the Football Ramble. Good to see you, Luke.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Yeah. So let's kind of set the scene, because Plimpton himself is quite an interesting bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, very much so. So he was a sort of protagonist and a proponent of this, what he would call participatory journalism, which before Hunter S. Thompson coined the term gonzo journalism, where the writer themselves sort of implants himself into the environment and becomes one of the protagonists. And of course, Tom Wolfe did it as well. George Plimpton was the guy who did it for sport. And although he's relatively unknown over this side of the Atlantic, in the US he is really seen as one of the great sports writers, if not the great sports writer. And he covered a number of different sports. So in 1958, for example, he pitched against a Major League Baseball team in a game, in a postseason exhibition game, and then wrote about it for Sports Illustrated, and then changed that into a book called Out of My League. He also he sparred against the great Archie Moore and the great Sugar Ray Robinson. So we're talking about the number three and number one pound-for-pound boxers of all time, according to Ring Magazine, and wrote about that in a book which then was called, I think, called Shadow Box a bit later on. He was a guy who just put himself at the centre of everything. He just thought, what way can I, as an everyman, and of course he was a very talented writer, but as an everyman and a layman in terms of sport, how can I give readers the definitive experience of what it's like to actually be there? And clearly it would be very difficult to do that in modern times because of the professionalisation of sport and the continued sort of aloofness, I guess, within each sport. But he was able to do it, and to me, his writing and his delivery is just so immersive. I mean, it's insightful, it's immersive in a way that really, it's very difficult. You guys, before we came on air, were given a couple of examples. I'm sure you can shed some more light. It's hard to think of a comparative writer these days, I would say.
Yeah. They said, we'll look at the... If there was somebody gave a nod to, but he's an interesting guy, really. He's kind of this sort of urbane, Ivy League type, went to Harvard, was probably expected to go in the family law firm, but took the journalistic route, as mates with Hemingway, didn't just write about sport, wrote about a lot of other stuff as well.
Yeah.
So in fact, you kind of explained what his books were about, but he was interviewed. Certainly, he died in 2003. And he gave an interview a few years before his death, and he kind of talked about what these sports books and why he wrote them. This is what he had to say.
And it was really this very, very basic idea. You know, 60,000 people go and watch a football game. They all sit up there in the stands. And yet you wonder what's going on there in the huddle. What are they saying to each other? What are they talking about along the bench? What goes on in a locker room just before the game? What's it like after a game when you've lost? And the only way you can get in there is to be a great athlete yourself. Chances of that are rather obscure. Or you can find some way as a reporter to work it out so that you can become a part of this for a while. And that was what my idea was.
Yeah, that was...
quite posh, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Amazing,
as we said,
voice.
He was the sort of bloke you'd see walking around the Hamptons with a kind of a jumper knotted over his shoulder.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. But he also admits he had a bit of a nod to a writer called Paul Gallico, who'd done some of that very similar work before he did. Gallico, he went and sparred with Jack Dempsey. He played golf with Bobby Jones. And he caught Dizzy Dean's fastball, famous baseball player, and he will probably tell us more about him. So he'd kind of gone down that route. He wrote a book about Lou Gehrig. So he'd written a lot about sport, and he said he looked at what Gallico did, and he thought, well, no one's really doing that now. Can I kind of take that on to another level? And he covered a number of sports, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I was very close to bringing a book called The Bogeyman to the table, which is where he spent... I mean, he found a lot of time to do things in the 60s, by the way. Pretty much everything happened in the 60s. He found the time to spend a month on the PGA Tour, and he entered and was accepted into three, I think, pro-am events. And at one point he and it's really just about the characters within the sport, and he's a sort of moderate golfer himself, but he gets across and puts across this idea that golf is the ultimate sort of mercurial sport. One minute you're quite good at it, the next day you don't know what you're doing. He talks about the psychology of it. At one point I think he plays either just behind or just in front the great Arnold Palmer, and it has to deal with Arnie's army, and he crosses paths with Jack Nicklaus and all the rest of it. And there's a fantastic bit in it where he's trying to master this, he seems to think if he plays at his very best as a golfer, he can sort of not embarrass himself in front of all these people, right?
Yeah.
But psychologically, he's just not in control of his own mind in any way. And he thinks every time he steps onto the tee, he gets to this point where he can't stop thinking about anything else than a group of Japanese Navy men taking over his brain, stopping him hitting the golf ball. And it's a great quote. He sees himself after a while in this book, The Bogeyman, when he's stepping up on the tee. He's an amateur. He's got a pro with him. There's crowds of people there. And he says, "I felt like a monstrous manned colossus poised high over the golf ball." He just lost everything about it. And so that's a really good way of finding out about what it was like to not just be a golfer in the 60s, but what came along with it, the caddies who were real characters back then, of course, the travel between events and really what made the great golfers tick. So really, he immersed himself in a number of different sports. And as you said, Paul, not just sports either. I think he spent a bit of time for maybe Vanity Fair as trying to be a circus high wire act.
That's right.
As well. Yeah, so he really did sort of live.
He
it.
Was mates with Edie Sedgwick and got to know Warhol and all these sort of. He was kind of a real man of the time. You know?
Well, and not only that, you know, there was someone wrote a retrospective on him. Again, I think either in Vanity Fair or the Washington Post or something like that, said he had a knack of being around big events when it happened. Someone described him as an intellectual Forrest Gump, to the point where he was standing next to Robert Kennedy when he was assassinated, and literally disarmed and subdued the attacker.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so he just found himself at the crossroads of all these amazing historical events.
You know, April Fools is coming. Sorry, Paul. Yeah. April Fools is coming up soon, and he is responsible for probably one of the greatest April Fools sort of japes in print that ever happened. He fooled all of the Sports Illustrated audience by coming up with this baseball player. He had the help of the New York Mets. And basically this guy called Sid Finch, who was apparently a practicing Buddhist. He wore this heavy boot on one foot. And he had this whole, he invented this whole thing about this guy, this new fabulous pitcher, and everybody bought into it. And it turned out, and then he wrote a book about it, about Sid Finch.
So he made this character up, didn't he? On the golf front, I mean, it was a fantastic era. And except he got, Harry Vardon was playing, and he talks about Arnie's Army. And the thing that we always kind of link to Tiger, the madness of Tiger, and people following the golfer getting on the greens before the players finished playing, but they were doing that around
Arnie's Army, I remember that complete mayhem
around that. He wrote about that as well.
It's still, by the way, Arnie's Army is still a really busy website and like group for fans. The great Arnold Palmer is obviously now passed away. People are still enthusiastic about him. There's still a really good.
So they didn't switch to the Barmy Army.
Where do we come from?
It's a great
Florida mainly. We've moved to Miami because we're in our 80s.
It's a great 0% income tax. It's a great 60s era as well, not just for the golfers, but at the time, I mean, I think these two events are still on the PGA Tour, but there's the Bob Hope Classic and the Bing Crosby Classic. But at the time, these guys are actually entertaining people there. So it's like, it's not just a golf event, it's like an amazing social event as well. And the people he brushes shoulders with, and he spends time in the car with incredible characters. I mean, he spends a bit of time with the great Walter Hagen, the great golfer of the 1920s, who sadly is near the end of his life at that point. Mm. But just the insight he gets, he takes 2 or 3 days out, spends it with these mostly black jazz fan caddies as well, who have got their own superstitions or anything going on, how they like to pair up with certain golfers to get certain amounts of money. It's just a fascinating account. Mm. And I was very close to bringing that. It's called The Bogeyman today, though. But we settled on Paper Line, which we'll talk about in a little
bit. We're going to talk about Paper Line in a moment, because as Luke was saying, he tried his hand, he pitched in the All-Star game, and he basically wanted to get ensconced in an American football team and had some trouble, tried a few and they wouldn't let him in, but thankfully the Detroit Lions did, and they made a film of it. Well, we had a little excerpt of the film as well. Alan Alda, you know, from MASH, was in the movie and played Plimpton, so we'll play you a little bit of that and talk more.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which
is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
We're midway through the book club with Luke Moore, and we've been discussing the work of George Plimpton. I don't know if we added actor to that list. He's in Good Will Hunting. I mean, he's in...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's in a bunch of different films as well.
What's he playing that? Because that's one of my
favourite films. I think he's got quite a minor role. I think I've got that right. Yeah, he's got a minor role in that film. He turns up in a bunch of different movies as an actor. He was in Lawrence of Arabia as an uncredited Bedouin.
Really? Yeah. What a life this is. That's right. It's amazing.
I'm trying to think of some of the other movies he's been in. Yeah, yeah. He's been in a bunch of different... Yeah, Good Will Hunting. He plays the psychologist Henry Lipkin.
Right.
There we are. There so we anyway, we've...
Do you know what? Yeah. I know the scene. He plays the scene and Matt Damon's character, Will Hunting, it's when he has an aborted... lots of different psychiatrists that he sees, and he's one of them. And Matt Damon's character tries to make out that he's a suspect type of character. I remember it anyway. Good.
Yeah,
that's and a revelation to me.
Also turns up as himself in When We Were Kings, which I think a lot of the TalkSport listeners would have seen. Yeah, so yeah. We move on then in detail to the book we're going to discuss, which is Paper Lion, when he basically joined up with the Detroit Lions and tried out with them.
So 1963, George Plimpton is 36 years old, so not a spring chicken in terms of professional athleticism.
Yeah.
But he manages to convince the Detroit Lions he manages to convince the coaching staff and I think the team doctor to allow him to train with the squad. They don't tell the players. All the players know is that this is a guy who's come along and he's trying out as the third string quarterback.
Mm.
And that sort of works okay for the first, all the sort of the rituals of the finding the locker room and the team meetings and all the rest of it. And the fitness work is not necessarily too bad. But then, of course, as soon as he gets involved and gets involved in the actual scrimmaging and they sort of realise straight away. But as a sort of curiosity, they sort of agree to let him continue, and he then just it becomes a presence around the group and around the team. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to let him at some point play a series of different downs in an exhibition match, essentially. And he, you know, we'll come to this shortly, but he eventually does do that. But what he does is he really gets under the fingernails of the superstitions around the team, what type of characters the players are. He gets to know them as people. And he does a really good job, actually, of ingratiating himself with the squad, despite the fact they all know he isn't an athlete. He never will be an athlete.
Yeah.
Yet they still sort of accept him. And Joe Schmidt, who was a great player for the Lions, I think he might have gone to coach the Lions as well, said the following. He said he tried to blend in with the rest of the team, but after a while you could just see that George wasn't much of an athlete. You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure that one out. You're in training camp and you're all pretty good football players, and George comes along and he's sort of emaciated looking. You know he's not too physical of a specimen and he can't throw the ball more than 15 yards. But having said that, they do kind of accept him and they do understand that he's an intelligent guy and he can understand the plays because, of course, as we all know, American football is a hugely complicated game when it comes to tactics and plays to be executed and different things to remember. There's some great characters throughout. The most notable for me would probably be the great Dick Night Train Lane, was a defensive back.
One of the most famous players in American football. Him.
A player of some brutality as well, Andy, I think you say. I mean, his specialist move was the Night Train necktie, where he used to essentially just clothesline people across the head. Because he said that if he tackles them around the legs, they sometimes get an extra yard or so, and it really annoys him. Of course, This is an era of football where the safety concerns around head injuries and all the rest of it, very serious issues that we talk about a lot when it comes to this sport in the modern day, weren't really on the radar. But Dick Lane was actually married to Dinah Washington.
Yeah, famous singer.
Who may well have sung over the top of Oscar Peterson.
Their paths would have crossed, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's got a thing about Oscar Peterson.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
That's because we played, that's a bit of the music we played.
And it's actually quite a tragic story because I think around 6 months after Dick Knight Train Lane marries Dinah Washington, she is found dead of an overdose of prescription pills.
Wow.
And this occurs while the book's happening, so it does go to some pretty dark places as well. But yeah, the whole thing's building up to about two-thirds into the book where he convinces the coaching staff to let him play these five plays.
Before we carry on, they made a movie of it with Alan Alda, as we said, of MASH fame. And he played Plimpton. It might be worth playing a little bit of the movie. This was the moment when because a number of teams knocked him back. New York Jets, New York Giants, Baltimore Colts. The coaches weren't keen. They didn't want an outsider involved. But he did talk the Detroit Lions into it. And this is the moment. They're in a restaurant with the head of media and the head coach of the Lions. And the head coach is wondering whether he should be trying to get involved in such a key position in the team.
Did you ever think about split end instead of quarterback?
Well, that's the whole idea, coach. Rookie quarterback trying to make the team. I wouldn't want any special treatment or privileges. I wouldn't even want the players to know that I'm a writer. I even have a cover worked out for myself that I've been playing semi-pro in Canada.
Well, the coaching staff would have to know.
Oh, sure, the staff.
Of course, the doctor.
Okay, but that's all. Look, coach, if it's not working out, you can always cut me.
All right, you have yourself a deal.
There we are. I'm sure it wasn't that simple, but a bit of literary license.
But the fact that the NFL commissioner Pete Rozelle got involved and he wouldn't let him play.
Yeah, so he did. So it's around 2 thirds into the book, he realizes he's going to play five downs, I think. That's the plan. He's going to play five downs in a, or five plays, if you like, in a exhibition match. And there is a crowd there. And it's a beautiful passage leading up to this where he turns up in the locker room and he gets his shoes out, the shoes he's going to wear to play, takes them out the locker.
The cleats.
And they feel really heavy. And he thinks, what's happening there? These guys, because they all know exactly what he's after and the kind of guy he is, and they know that he's a writer. And there's a lot of hijinks and pranks going on in the squad, as you can imagine. He picks up his shoes and they feel really heavy. So he goes around to all the other players saying, look, what have you done to my shoes? And everyone's swearing blind, they haven't touched them. And he says, this is ridiculous. I can't play in these shoes. You've ruined my chance and all the rest of it. And someone just turns up and says, what you got there is a case of heavy feet, son. It's just all nerves. Just put them on, you'll be fine. He said, what happens is you get so nervous that your hands, when you're trying to grab hold of the ball, and your feet feel so heavy you can't move. He gets into the middle of the scrimmage. There's a beautiful passage when he's called onto the field and he's got the huddle around him because he's the quarterback. He's calling the shots. And he notices that the finest moment of what it's like to be a professional athlete in his mind is just before the big thing happens. And he says, the pleasure of sport is often the chance to indulge the cessation of time itself. The pitcher dawdling on the mound, the skier poised at the top of a mountain trail, the basketball player with the rough skin of the ball against the palm preparing for a foul shot, or the tennis player at set point over his opponent, all of them savouring a moment before committing themselves to action. And then I had the sense of a portcullis coming down. And to cut a long story short, the first day, he's desperate to play a passing play. He wants to get the ball, he wants to drop back out of trouble, and he wants to throw it. They all know he can't throw the ball properly, though, so they convince him to do running plays. And this first play, he gets the ball snapped from the centre. All he's got to do is spin to his left for the running back to come behind him and give it to him. He's so slow that the protective defensive player, he doesn't get out of the way quick enough. Defensive protective player bundles him over. Before he can even get the ball to the running back, he's fumbled it, right, and he loses 5 yards, and he has absolutely no idea what's happened. he just knows instinctively to get on the ball, dive on it, gets up, and he has no idea what's happened. And it roughly sort of continues like that. I think they lose yards on every down, and to come back to the NFL commissioner point, he then gets back into a situation where he tries to say to them, if we get into a game in the proper season where we're 50 points ahead, can I come on? And the coach is like, okay, well, we'll think about it. And then the NFL commissioner comes and says, no, you can't do it. It undermines the integrity of our sport. We're not having it, and puts a block on it. Mm. But he carries on
probably
the rest
right.
of the season. Yeah. He carries on the rest of the season with the team, and he's part, very much part of the squad.
Can you, it's hard to imagine getting that kind of access now. We're seeing in TV and the new series on Netflix and various things. We're seeing.
I quite like to see Martin Lipton as a member of the Spurs squad.
Well, just the idea.
I mean, so would he, I expect.
The idea that someone could go in there and just pass themselves off, you know, and say to the other players, I can do this. I mean, you know, as a footballer, you'd probably be found. Even if you're a good footballer, you go into a pro setup at the very top. If you go and train with Manchester City, they'll know you're not a top class pro.
I think there's a couple of points on that. One is the Sunderland's Lodi documentary series, for example, is a great example of getting behind the scenes of what's happening. To me, that's nowhere near the same.
No, of course. Yeah.
And I believe Max Rushton of this parish once did some trials, did a trial at a professional club, and he's quite a good footballer, Max, where he was, and did okay.
And it's, it I think was the legs are gone now. He's, I know he's listening.
He's had knee problems.
But the interesting thing was, from the footage I saw, he seemed to do okay. But they without being disrespectful to Max, who I do like, they were like, almost like thinking he was like laughably bad. So I think the gap is really, really big these days. It's so professionalised. And especially in NFL. In NFL, these kids, they are playing at arguably as good a level when they're 18, 19 years old at college, you know?
Yeah.
So it's almost, I mean, the drawbridge has been pulled up, the ladder's been pulled up to such an extent, it's going to be very difficult, I think, to ever get anywhere near that again.
So, that's Paper Line, the one we'd focused on there, but as we said, there's a whole series of sports books by George Plimpton that were reissued a couple of years ago. You said Yellow Jersey Press, that's right.
Yes, that's right, yeah, part of Penguin, I think.
So, if you want to revisit those, they are fantastic books. Whichever sport he covered, he did brilliantly. And, say, was a really fascinating guy, wasn't he? He was very much a product of his time, wasn't he? That sort of character.
Immersed himself in his trade, and I think he said he wanted to be remembered, or that he made a comment saying, look, my art is my life. I take my life, I put myself in these positions and these situations, and I write about it and give people an idea. So he really did put his whole self on the line for his art, and that is something that obviously we don't see happen very often, and so it's something that is hugely deserving of respect. And what comes out is something that The Guardian say, which is that just made sports writing something that mattered, something that be up above and beyond what we'd normally expect from someone on the outside observing. He took himself, transplanted himself into that situation, and did it from the inside looking out.
Max Rushton has been in charge. He says, Poly Fours versus Civil Service at home tomorrow, if everyone wants to see just how badly the legs have gone.
That was you said that, Paul, not me.
Yeah, I might go down there. It's not far from me.
Yeah. And everybody, I think, hopefully enjoyed that chat, although PJ said, I was really looking forward to hearing about the great George Clinton.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah.
But he said, it's about time I got a DAB radio, so no Parliament Funkadelic.
I'll speak to Danny Kelly about that on Friday. He'll be up for that. Yeah.
Nice one, Luke. Thank you very
much. Luke.
Pleasure. Thank
you. That was the book club. Are we back next Tuesday on our normal day?
I believe so. Oh, yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have a new book. We're going to have time to turn that round.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Okay, we'll have a new book for you next Tuesday. Because we do read these, we don't blag it. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
In the meantime, we have a little bit of time. I'll tell you what, I should let people know that next Tuesday when Luke comes in, if you want to get involved, you've read this book, or you want to maybe check the book out or reread it and get involved in the conversation, Why England Lose by Simon Cooper. That's K-U-P-E-R. We're going to be looking at that book, which has got some very interesting stuff, some content. They're losing less than they used to.
We don't lose
under
anymore.
Gareth. That's right. But maybe that in itself will be interesting. But we're going to do that one on Tuesday, returning to football. So, Andy, do you have anything for us?
Well, I'm quite excited about the next race.
Are you really? I know you've been. Yeah, you've decided to keep an eye on. Now we've been putting on Sky Racing on
Linkfield.
Our monitors here.
Yeah, so
why are you excited? Tell us what you're on, Andy.
I think I might be on.
Actually putting any money on it. It's just doing it for the sport.
Taverner.
Okay, that's nice. Okay,
3-1 favourite.
Let's see if that comes. Anybody can go for the favourites.
It's
Andy's nap of the day.
It's Noel Feely's last race tomorrow. What a brilliant jockey he's been, and a big fixture at Cheltenham. And I was reading this morning the trainer. He feels under so much pressure because he's won this race the last 2 years with this horse, and there's no such thing in racing. It is a bumper, but there's no such thing as a sure thing. But as much as this can be, and the idea is for Noel to go out on a winner, which would be really lovely, wouldn't it?
Bruce Millington from the Racing Post said over the years that he'd known Noel, when they'd spoken to him for the Post, he'd never been sort of irascible or short-tempered or difficult. And he said, so we never actually had the opportunity to have the headline touchy-feely. they never got the chance.
It's rather a
shame. He'd been a bit nastier.
And earlier in the week, we found out that Eddie Jones has nabbed
Jones.
Been
Pippa Grange.
Yeah, Pippa Grange.
Pippa Grange is one of the, apart from Gareth Southgate, I would reckon Pippa Grange is one of the main reasons why England did well in the World Cup in Russia last year. And I think it's a bit of a loss to Gareth, this, because more and more in sport now, especially as people are in touch with their feelings and players are encouraged to talk about stuff, you know, the psychologist, the role of the psychologist is even bigger than it's ever been, and probably better than Yuri Geller, who told Alan that England should take him.
Oh, right.
Yes, I'm not sure.
Well, he did make the ball move when Gary Mack took the penalty.
That's very true.
So, I mean, that was his great service to
English football.
I think
we've got a bit of Yuri later in Clips of the Week.
Yeah, we have. Yuri pops up. The I just wonder now, kind of Eileen Drury and everything that went on around that World Cup under Glenn. I wonder what sort of reaction she would get now. In the, you know, I wonder how she'd
be the most important person.
I wonder how she'd be viewed
differently.
I
think.
I wonder if Ray Parlour would ask her again for a short back and sides. I do wonder.
Probably not. And I don't know if you'd buy one of these, but a smart bin that tells chefs the type of food they're throwing away is cutting waste and saving restaurants money. You think, that's a bit of an odd item, isn't it? I mean, can't you see what you're throwing away? Would you suddenly throw it all away in the dark without sort of looking? But anyway, I'm not buying one.
I've got no idea, Andy. You've got me there. So Motti's here shortly, and we're going to be taking a good look at the weekend's games, get his thoughts on England.
Yeah, he was recording a trail for your show that you're doing with him.
Oh, right.
Live show, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we'll give that another mention in a minute. The, what was I going to say? I'm looking forward to watching England tonight. I don't always say that, but I do enjoy watching the team play at the moment.
Well, you feel differently about it now.
Yeah.
You know, Gareth changed the whole thing.
Cut to the sports bar tonight and we've lost 3-0 down in Scotland. And they're getting pelters.
No, I don't think so.
No,
you know.
I think they'll be okay. So it's live on TalkSport, just a reminder. We're going to bring you that game live at 7 o'clock here on TalkSport. Full commentary of that game. And I saw a lot of fans of the Czech Republic out and about. Coming across London Bridge earlier on. A lot of them in the city and sort of taking in the sights of London. They all had cans on the go. I'm sure they'll behave themselves.
Oh,
but,
yeah. But I think
this was about half past 11. They're having a little livener.
Yes, it might
be. But no, they all seem pretty good humoured. They all seem pretty good. So it should be a good atmosphere tonight. I remember going to see Czechoslovakia play England. I think it was Gazza's first game at Wembley just prior to Italia 90. He got a couple of goals and played 4-2. That was a good Czechoslovakia side.
I don't remember it.
Yeah. It would have been Czech Republic by then. That would have been Czechoslovakia still, wouldn't it? Of course, yeah, 1989. So, he was fantastic. That was the night that Bobby Robson said he was daft as a brush.
Well, he was.
Yeah, well, of course he was. Yeah.
And he still is. And interesting to see that Thibaut Courtois made another wicket for Belgium.
You take no pleasure?
No, none of us do at Chelsea. Honestly, he's calmer since he left in the way he left. It's been a disaster for him, really.
Yeah. Are you gutted, are you?
No.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Martin Kellner, of course, is with us.
I think you'll be safe in this segment.
Probably. A week. We won't go viral, you don't think?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, you are quite outrageous.
I can be
You're the closest we got to Howard Stern.
Oh, bless you.
Yeah.
I'll take that as a big compliment. I really do.
So, Martin, what have you watched sports-wise this week on TV?
Well, I've watched two programmes. I've watched more than two programmes, actually, but two programmes.
I hope so. We've got about 10 minutes.
Yeah, good. Well, I was promised to actually bump a bundle this week because I didn't do last week.
Yeah.
That's very true.
But two programmes. One that was supposed to be funny and wasn't.
Right.
And one that was not particularly supposed to be funny and was.
Okay.
Which we'll start with Harry's Heroes, the full English. I'm sure quite a few of you watched that.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I really did enjoy it because, I mean, the great thing about it was, although the, quotes, bants was amusing.
Yeah.
And then we got the dump button ready.
Okay.
When they weighed David Seaman, they all weighed in.
Yeah.
And I won't quote it, but they weighed David Seaman and some of the people said, ooh, 90 kilos of...
yeah, that's right. There were certain jokes along those lines.
Lots of jokes along those lines. Yeah. Which was great fun.
It was a bit nervous when he actually says, have you got the dump button ready?
You know it's going to be a problem, isn't it?
But I thought it was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. It reminded me of the... You know the Hatton Garden jewellery blag where they got the old gang together?
Where Harry is Michael Caine, sort of thing.
Very much so. Well, they've got all the old boys together.
Yeah.
It was a little bit like that.
I mean, I thought... The good thing about it, I thought, was it the actual basic idea could have been a kind of a bit tired, but A, because of the way they did it and the extra layers that they brought to it, talking about the guy's health, talking about life after football. There was it was a basic idea. It could have been done very badly, but well done to people that produced and directed it, because they did a great job. Well done all the guys involved. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, Merce talking very frankly about his gambling addiction, which has has resurfaced, if you like, and obviously. Believe it or not, Reza Ruddock has got a few problems weight-wise, which we wouldn't have believed. The great thing was, a lot of these people who were on the show, they'd arrived as veterans of hundreds of reality TV shows. I must have seen Lee Sharp and Reza Ruddock on several TV shows.
But I think you did see a different side of Reza. He's normally kind of very jokey and upfront, but there with his missus, and she'll getting upset because of, you know, any health issues he could get when they kind of hit him and what could happen to him in future. It was all quite sobering, wasn't it?
Yeah. And the celeb's done a lot for Harry Redknapp, hasn't it, as well? It's done a lot for his sort of broadcasting career.
But he was good. I thought the voiceover was good. Was really but the voiceover, very well.
I mean, you didn't quite swallow the voiceover. No. He says, I've got an idea. I wanted to see what would happen. That's right, Harry. It was your idea. You wanted to see what would happen.
The amount of pitch meetings Harry must have gone to.
Oh, millions of them, isn't it?
Well, the next thing is I've got an idea for a daytime quiz show.
Yes.
He's going to be doing, I got an idea for a 5-part documentary on Netflix. Yeah. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be brilliant. I'm off now to go and meet Showtime. It'd be brilliant when he's just flying around these. Brilliant.
So I didn't swallow that. Also, a lot of the voiceover was a bit unnecessary.
Football managers in cars drinking coffee.
I'm coming to that.
Football managers in cars. With Kevin Bond driving and Harry in the passenger seat and the celebrity in the back. Maybe they work
we'll
a song.
One of his bits of voiceover, he said, here's Lee Sharp. Sharpie as we know him. Wow, who'd have thought they'd known him as Sharpie? Mark Wright, known as Wrighty.
Paul
Merce was Merce. It was all. But I thought it was good. And I enjoyed that they played a little game against a boys' club, Ridgeway Boys, famous.
My son used to run against Ridgeway Rovers. You have David Beckham's old side. Was Harry Kane there as well?
Harry Kane was there as well.
Nice club. They're nice parents. Nice setup there,
and
I remember.
They were giving 175 stones to the England. Old lags, so I enjoyed all that. Now, that wasn't particularly meant to be funny, but I enjoyed the bits of bounce and everything. There's another programme you've sort of obliquely referenced.
Yes, I know.
Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, which is a brilliant series that Jerry Seinfeld does.
His mates like
Chris Rock and David Letterman.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, the programme Comedians Watching Football with Friends doesn't have comedians of the calibre of David Letterman and Chris Rock.
Right.
I know this will shock you. All these guys who are on it, nothing wrong with it. They've been on your show loads of times, these guys, so I'm not going to slag them off. But what I will say is, apart from the fact that it has comedians, somebody's obviously seen comedians in cars getting coffee and thinks, comedians, that's a good idea. Mm. And so if you make the first word of the programme title comedians, people maybe think it's funny. The thing about comedians, the one thing you don't ask them to do when you do an interview, which you've done loads of interviews with comedians, so have I, is be funny. I mean, they're personable comedians. They're decent guests to have, etc. They're well known. A lot of them write very well and perform very well. But if you've got them sitting down in a chair,
It's not the same thing, is it?
It's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's not like doing stand up. And
isn't it similar to what you'd see them do on a sort of panel show, effectively?
No, it's not. That's the whole point.
Right.
I think on a panel show,
is it like
show,
a football goggle box type thing? They're watching
it. Like a football goggle box.
But with an audience, which I thought was interesting. They've got the audience there.
I think it's just to try and make it seem funnier than it is. But I have to say, I watched, and I know some of these people, and I like some of these people, and I've been on panel shows with some of these people. And when you're on panel shows with these people, what you do is you get the questions slightly in advance, and that means you can prepare some stuff, which comedians are very good at doing. Comedians are very good at preparing stuff, writing stuff, performing stuff. What they're not that good at doing, and don't ask them to do it because it's not their job, is watching. Is just watching something on the TV and coming. Gogglebox. Now that is a genius program.
Yeah,
Gogglebox is brilliant, but And I know you know, as I say, you know these people, and I know these people. But it's rubbish.
But it's heavily edited Gogglebox to make everybody look good and funny, isn't it? You know.
I've seen half an episode of the comedian show on Sky, and I didn't find it quite as bad as
No, it's not bad. It's just cheap.
Right. You know, okay.
Which a lot of TV is these days. Okay, it's cheap. Yeah. If you prepare.
Not like this bit of radio we're doing.
No, yeah. Well, radio's supposed to be cheap. That's the joy of radio. That's the absolute joy of radio. Nothing quite as cheap as my overnight show on talk radio, but, you know, it's cheapish. I'll tell you what I thought was interesting as well. On the Harry show, you know, Harry's Heroes, was sponsored by Alpecin Caffeine Shampoo. Mm. Now, I don't know whether you boys have ever used caffeine shampoo. Does that sort of wake your hair up?
I've never used it. Maybe I should get some in.
Very popular in Germany. Yeah. As it happens.
What does the caffeine do for your hair?
Well, that's what I want to know.
And to make it stick up like Kramer's hair or something?
Possibly. Or just keeps you... I don't know whether it has one of those effects where it just keeps you active all day, you know, because your hair's had a bit of caffeine. And that's going to be a good...
It doesn't sound right.
I also just finally because I can see the clock here. I'm fine.
You've got a couple of minutes, Martin.
While I'm slacking things off, the Premier League show, which I usually find quite enjoyable with Gabby Logan.
It's on an earlier slot these days, isn't it?
Good slot, I think. I usually quite enjoy that, but obviously this week they're struggling a bit because there's no Premier League, so you call it the Premier League show. So they got four people together to decide to vote on who are the best overseas players. Mm-hmm. But it was a ridiculous concept because they were doing one goalkeeper, Schmeichel, I think they chose, one defender. So, you know, who's better, Stam or Vidic?
Yeah.
Or Virgil van Dijk?
I hate all this. I always resist it. It's completely unquantifiable. It's just one person's opinion against another person's opinion.
I suppose the joy is in the discussion of it it doesn't do it for me
because you're comparing apples and pears, really, aren't you?
Yeah.
So who's better, Gianfranco Zola or Thierry Henry? Go on, who's better?
you can't say,
you put me on the spot. They did a different job. They did the same job. They're both footballers. Yeah. One of them wasn't a plasterer. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. It's nonsense, isn't it? Yeah. And I think a more entertaining show would be who are the worst overseas players who've ever played in the UK?
Who was the worst? You thought about that? There was one I never read, John Dahl Thomason. I used to think he just would go from club to club, and I never quite did it for me.
I don't think anybody could be interested in this chat either.
But it's the same thing because somebody else said, I'm upsetting Andy.
That's not, he's not joining in. He's sitting there with his compact, making sure he's not shining. He's not part of this conversation. Who was the best, Andy Jacobs, or if you got involved in that kind of setup, who was the best radio broadcaster?
What, of all time?
No, it doesn't matter. It's okay. I'm just being slightly facetious.
I'd say that bloke that's on talk radio overnight.
Bless you. Bless you.
Martin Kellner.
Yes.
He is good. Yeah. I like him.
That's like an old radio effort.
Yeah.
I think a man of his caliber.
Martin Kellner. Yes, Martin Kellner. Where can I hear him? On talk radio.
Just one more thing.
Yeah, go on.
I know a lot of listeners to your show like to know my idiot bets. Hmm. Last week, around about this time, I was talking to John Rentoul, who's the political correspondent of The Independent, and we were sort of trying to think if Theresa May would get her deal through.
Yeah.
And we thought there was a chance that the sort of sensible wing of the Labour Party, sort of people like Lisa Nandy, those sort of people, might switch, and they'd indicated they might switch and back her vote.
Yeah.
Obviously, at the end of the day, there wasn't a vote, but they thought she might back the vote and some other people might back the vote. I backed it 9-4.
Right.
I just had a look at the odds and it was 3-1 on. She wouldn't get a deal through. 9-4 she would. I thought, well, that looks good.
Well, there we are. So, Martin, you do realise that we had 4 days of top quality racing at Cheltenham last week while you were having a bet on that?
I know. People do say don't back anything that can talk.
Yeah.
Which is probably good. Although I didn't do very well at Cheltenham either, actually.
Oh, dear. Martin, you are on overnight.
I am on overnight.
At talk radio, and you can hear that tonight and tomorrow between 1 and 5.
1 and 5, ridiculous. And I also have a podcast with my daughter.
Yeah, you do. Yes, right. Which is it's a good one this week. You've covered some ground.
It is a good one. We've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah. Okay.
It's funny, I think.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
So that was this afternoon's show. We're back on Monday from 1. Thanks for downloading us, and have a great weekend.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.